From New York Public Radio, this is On the Media. On the Media is produced by WNYC and heard across America on NPR stations. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Support your local public radio station. Visit onthemedia.org to find where On the Media is playing near you. And please help support this free service by becoming a member of WNYC at wnyc.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
From WNYC in New York, this is NPR's On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. In the next 2 years, the White House will have to at least make an effort to placate an increasingly restive, now Democratic, Congress. Meanwhile, the White House press secretary will be coping with an increasingly cantankerous press corps.
Well, if you listen to the chairman, you'll have noted he's not trying to... David, please. You get mad.
I read the report. I'm just saying those are all quotes.
I know they're all quotes. I'm now going to try to place them in context.
White House Press Secretary Tony Snow seems to glory in the post that appeared to crush his predecessor Scott McClellan. But there's no question something about those briefings brings out the beast in nearly everyone. One such beast was ABC newsman Sam Donaldson. His first stint in the press room spans 1977 to 1987, the second from 98 to 99, when the briefings first went live. Last March, we called him to relive that experience. He told us that the briefing room had changed a lot in the intervening decade and that it had everything to do with the presence of the camera.
I think it was a great impact on the briefing process, and I think negatively, and I've thought that for years, and I noticed the other day that Mike McCurry, the man who had instituted that process, said he thought it was one of his mistakes, and I agree.
Why?
Well, in the White House briefing room, the press secretary for whichever administration, doesn't matter, comes out to say only what the president wants him to say and no more. And, of course, reporters want to know more and want to talk about maybe the bad news, not just the good news. So it can get very tense at times, and you go back and forth. And when people see this on television, they say, well, what are these nasty, vicious dogs of the press doing, assailing that fine, upstanding individual who's press secretary of the president? And it just really doesn't help the process. And as I say, it can get very tense. I can remember times when I was there when there was no television, when we'd go, Helen Thomas and I and others would go round and round with Larry Speaks or even Marlon Fitzwater, who was one of the very best. And you'd hurl, well, you're not telling the truth here. What do you mean I'm not telling the truth? Don't you accuse me of not telling the truth? I can remember an exchange like that. So I don't think this is something new that just comes about because the cameras are there.
Well, let me make a proposition in defense of having cameras in that room. It seems to me that if the reporters are asking questions and the press secretary is deflecting them, dodging them, or what have you, isn't it to the, benefit of media and democracy to watch those questions not being answered in real time?
You have a point. And if all the viewers were discerning, or the majority of them were discerning, and they watched daily, and they understood the issues, and went back and forth and saw that the press secretary was dodging something, because most press secretaries are very artful. They will simply say, for instance, the president has said as long as the ongoing investigation continues, it would be inappropriate for him to say anything. Well, that sounds very reasonable. But, of course, if you point out that the president last week, in fact, commented on the investigation when it served his purpose, then you're going to have this little fight with the press secretary. So I think at first glance, people watching, when they see that little fight develop, may not say to themselves, aha, this press secretary is dissembling, is doing the light fantastic. They will simply say, at least it's been my experience, that they say, well, why are you being so mean? I mean, he's answered the question. Well, why do you keep persisting with the very same question that he's answered? I don't understand. Have you got an agenda?
So in terms of media literacy, what the public has to understand is, sure, you can watch these briefings, but you really should stay tuned for the resulting story because it will at least attempt to put things in perspective and not just show an ongoing tit for tat between the spokesman and a group of reporters.
Well, I think that's right, because after all, if you're reporting on the presidency, it's important to be at the briefings, but that's only one part, and sometimes it's the very smallest part of assembling facts for the story. But as you assemble the other facts for your story, people aren't being there to watch. They're not able to see you make the telephone calls that might give you the vital piece that clarifies things. To have people watch only a small portion of the process of collecting the story, and one where you are contentious and disputes arise and voices are raised, that it really doesn't serve the public well.
All right, Sam. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Sam Donaldson, among many other achievements in his storied career, was twice a White House correspondent for ABC News.
For three decades, press secretaries have tended to come from policy and public relations backgrounds. But there was a time when presidents routinely recruited spokesmen from the other side of the podium. FDR, Eisenhower, JFK, and Ford all did. But the current spokesman, Tony Snow, is a different animal, very much a product of his times, not just because he's the first TV personality tapped for the job, but because, as a Fox News pundit and sometimes substitute for Rush Limbaugh, he's straddled the increasingly blurry line between journalism and opinion mongering. Soon after Snow's appointment last April, we spoke to ABC News political director Mark Halperin, who predicted that Snow would use his TV experience to good effect.
It's only been two presidencies where the briefing has been televised. I don't think any of the previous television era press secretaries have used a daily televised briefing to maximum effect. And the thought is that having someone who will use that stage the way he used a commercial television network's venue to try to advance the cause of a president, we'll see how effective it can be. And if he's effective, I suspect that the job description for future White House press secretaries will include must have 3 to 5 years of broadcast television or radio experience, because it is an incredibly valuable platform. There's no other press secretary for any entity in the United States whose work commands so much attention, including often live cable and radio coverage, including the ability to become the lead quote in the network news and in wire stories all across the world.
Mark Halperin is ABC News political director. Mike McCurry is the man to blame for the decision to go live in the briefing room. He served as press secretary for President Clinton for 4 years, shuffling and sidestepping like the best of them, but respected by the press, perhaps because he let those cameras roll, perhaps because he seemed genuinely frustrated by presidential mendacity, or perhaps because he quit in 1998, declaring that he was out of the loop on the Lewinsky scandal. When we spoke to him last February, we observed that the briefing room had grown far livelier in the last year, but was just as uninformative.
Well, I tell you, that place, you know, many listeners may not know, it's built over a former swimming pool. And there are times when you're standing up there as press secretary, you'd like a trap door to open so you could plunge into the deep end, because that's where you feel like you are.
And you take responsibility for some of that, don't you? You were quoted in Catherine Seelye's New York Times piece Monday saying that allowing those briefings to be aired live on TV was a, quote, huge error on your part.
Look, I think if I had put a simple ground rule on that initial decision to allow coverage, it would have made for a much different environment. If I had said, look, this is all available for coverage, you can use it in your stories, but let's not have live transmission of these proceedings, because that will get in the way of us being able to explore thoroughly certain subjects.
Why would it?
Because then journalists would have to do what good journalists do. They would have to use editorial judgment in picking out the things that really are important that the public needs to know, versus those things that are just mildly entertaining.
So you're saying you would prefer to have the media filter, as Bush puts it, bearing down on this process?
It's a, you know, ironic admission, but I would. I would, at the end of the day, rather put my trust in people who are going to try to go and scan all the information that's available and then put it in some coherent frame for the consumer, for the citizen, than to just kind of give this incoherent taste of what goes on in that briefing room that nobody can really understand because you're not part of the game.
But certainly you must have assumed that some benefit would accrue to the White House. I know that CNN told you that when you were on the air, they got 100,000 extra households tuning in.
Sure. There was a lot of self-interest in the decision not the least of which I really enjoyed the idea of being a momentary matinee idol on C-SPAN. But you're right, that the ability to frame a response through all the media that's available, that did advantage the White House.
But I guess pretty soon after you decided to roll those briefings live, the Monica Lewinsky scandal happened, and probably you would have been happier if you had less regular exposure to the press.
Once it became a live televised event in the days of Monica Lewinsky, I think it lost a lot of its usefulness because people were putting on a show. I was, you know, putting on a show, standing there as the beleaguered aide, trying desperately to get off to a different subject. The press had to hone in and bore in on what was the scandal du jour. And it ceased to become what a news briefing ought to be, a way in which we can pass information to the media so that they can then report and get the information to the public. My fear is most citizens watch this and it just adds to their sense of despair that, you know, Washington is screwed up and people don't get it there because what they're talking about doesn't have anything to do with what my life is about.
It's because the print reporters there want an actual usable quote that advances the story, and McClellan isn't doing it, so they'll hammer away. The TV people will hammer away for their own reasons. The whole reporting process becomes distorted, you say, by the liveness of this event. And in fact, some reporters say that they don't like it at all, that they would really prefer that people don't watch them work.
Look, those reporters know, because they're told regularly by the outfits that survey this, for example, the Pew Charitable Trust, that have done a lot of work on what are public attitudes towards the media. They know that the media as an institution has been in decline, just like government itself. There's less trust, less favorable reaction to the work that gets done. And I think that's in part because we're letting too much of the sausage being seen made. My other concern is now it seems like the entire federal government, which is a vast enterprise, is being filtered through that one room where there's a podium and a handful of reporters. And then, you know, we're losing a lot of the coverage of all the other aspects of government that need to be in front of the American people.
All right. Thanks very much.
Good being with you.
Mike McCurry is a Washington-based communications consultant and former press secretary to President Clinton. Here's a taste of Mike McCurry behind the podium that last time.
I was determined when that story broke back in January was to never come here and do what some of my predecessors unfortunately did, which was to lie to you and mislead you. And sometimes not knowing the answer, even though that puts you in a tough position too, is better than consciously misleading people. You know, did I ever knowingly come here and send you folks in the wrong direction? I did not.
We know what you like, dear listeners, and have we got a holiday gift for you.
This is On the Media from NPR. This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. This is the time of year when we like to take stock of ourselves, our show, and you, our listeners. And lucky for us, a few months ago, we managed to get hold of a document that purported to tell us everything we wanted to know about you, but were afraid to ask. Brooke reported on it then, and we're going to replay it now, in case you missed it.
Some 25 years ago, I worked for Public Broadcasting's industry newspaper called Current. One story I remember fondly was about one of NPR's earliest comprehensive demographic surveys of its listeners. The headline, "Now It Can Be Told, NPR Listeners Don't Bowl." This summer, NPR released its latest survey, more than 500 jam-packed pages with data on consumption, attitudes, and behavior, from personal politics to the purchase of laxatives. And that got me thinking of linguist Jeffrey Nunberg, the politics more than the laxatives. Nunberg often appears on public radio, and his new book is called Talking Right: How Conservatives Turned Liberalism into a Tax-Raising, Latte-Drinking, Sushi-Eating, Volvo-Driving, New York Times-Reading, Body-Piercing, Hollywood-Loving, Left-Wing Freak Show. Sounds kind of like the classic stereotype of the NPR listener, doesn't it? Or so conservative congressional budget cutters like to imply when it's time to reconsider public broadcasting's funding. So I thought I'd check out the new report. Now, it's a big tome, and I could have missed the sushi, the body piercing, and the lattes, but NPR News listeners really do like Starbucks, and yes, you are 173% more likely to buy a Volvo and 310% more likely to read the Sunday Times. And you do go to the movies, but not substantially more than other Americans. Now, as far as left wing goes, you are more likely to live on the coasts, which tend to be blue, and you definitely liked the West Wing more than average. But then again, you were 13% less likely to watch Will and Grace, so go figure. You're more likely to drink more soy milk, which always seems kind of lefty to me, but since you're slightly more lactose intolerant, that may be what you put in your lattes. And you're more than twice as likely to drink French wine, which could suggest that you hate your own freedom. And oh yeah, you are more likely to describe yourself as liberal. Obviously, the average NPR listener is not the only listener. Some of you are broke, plenty of you are conservative, quite a few of you are young, and 20% of you are not white. A few of you even watch Fear Factor, though not many, and probably because of the ontological implications. But one general impression you get, reading through the survey, is that you're more curious than average, more eager to spend time in other countries. 30% of NPR News listeners are more likely to want to, quote, understand how the world works. But what I was struck most by was your self-esteem. For instance, you are 25% less likely to treat wrinkles. I think NPR's marketers could do something with that. And most important, since I saw that survey back in the early 80s, you've nearly caught up to the national average in bowling.
So now that we know all about you, we thought we'd expose a little bit more of ourselves. On the Media has never been shy about finding fault and poking fun at all sorts of media institutions, from the Fox News Channel to the New York Times to vanity license plates. Very seldom, though, have we placed our own institution, public radio, under our pitiless gaze. And yet, public radio, with all its conflicts and eccentricities, isn't just an inviting target, it's the proverbial side of a barn. What follows, therefore, is a preposterously extravagant offering of the most outrageous stereotypes ever applied to public radio, an unforgivably self-indulgent exercise in biting the hand that feeds us.
Actually, we've done it before. This will be the third broadcast of our only effort at full-fledged radio theater, and we call our little production Pledge This. It's a sneak peek into the life of a struggling public radio station in the mythical planned community of Blandon Park, and it stars Janine Garofalo, Fred Willard, and Tony Shalhoub. Actually, we'd make replays of Pledge This a holiday tradition if we thought we could get away with it. By the way, NPR had nothing to do with this. Bob and I wrote it. So send your compliments to onthemedia@wnyc.org.
Fine time to leave.
Dr. Tom Richards, Blandin Park's leading cosmetic surgeon, celebrates the grand opening of his Lipo Depot.
Celebrates the grand opening of his Lipo Depot.
WFAST, give us 2 minutes and 45 seconds and we'll give you the...
WACLU 87.1, all the way to the left on your radio dial. Listeners supported news and Dulcimer broadcasting direct 18 hours a day, 24 during pledge drives from the Blandin Park Mall. Coming up, Blandin Park Edition with Trent Rosenblit.
Trent Rosenblit, your Ethiopian takeout is waiting at the desk. Mary Demarest, line one. Mary, line one.
I didn't eat all my baba ganoush, if anybody wants it. Hello, newsroom. This is Mary Demarest. Oh, hello, Your Excellency. No, I really don't. Now? Can it wait? Well, I know the station has a cash flow problem, but there's a pledge drive in a couple of weeks. I'm sure that will bring in, gosh, hundreds of dollars. Shut down the station. Things can't be that bad. All right, but please, make it fast, and don't let it be another sleazebag. How would I define sleazebag? Mr. Pringle, wasn't your last hot underwriting prospect the Psychic Hotline Federation? You're the president. Bye. Unbelievable. Trent, guess what?
That was Pringle. The station is broke, and he's bringing in another unsavory underwriter. Have you tried the Ethiopian kick, Alicia? Pureed yellow lentils and exotic spices. Marvelous.
Do you have to listen to all my conversations?
Mary, how far do we sit apart?
3 feet.
What do you do all day?
Talk on the phone.
What do you do after every call?
Tell you about it.
Even when I'm...
busy.
The day you set up that David Bowie interview, what did you do when you hung up the phone?
Told you about it.
Even though I was...
passing a kidney stone. Come on, Trent, it was David Bowie, for crying out
loud. No, I don't disagree. The point is, Mary, I'm not eavesdropping. I'm just skipping the middleman.
All right. Do you think we're really in trouble?
Oh, jeez. Que sera, sera. Listen, I want to talk to you about this Jenkins interview today. I've been looking over the questions, and they seem to lack a certain gravitas.
What?
Well, I don't want to be harsh, but the material is a bit lightweight. I was wondering if you might take another look.
Oh, come on, Trent. It's 3 o'clock. Our cutaway is in 83 minutes. I have an entire newscast to write. I have to edit Porfiria's commentary. I have to scratch the ears of Pringle's latest capitalist running dog. And if you don't like the questions, write some of your own.
You know I don't write questions. That's the producer's job.
All right. What questions don't you like?
Well... for example, Courtney Jenkins, you are the Girl Scout cookie sales champ for Blandin Park. You sold 1,212 boxes of cookies. What are your selling secrets?
What on earth is the matter with that?
Don't you find it a bit juvenile?
She's 11.
That's no reason to be condescending.
Those jackasses, those simple-minded jackasses!
Ah, our understated commentator. New horn on the wheelchair, Porfiria?
Hello, Porfiria. You look so lovely today.
I can't believe this.
Can't believe what?
I don't mean lovely in a patronizing way.
Gott in Himmel. This frosts my patoot.
Because I would never resort to demeaning gender stereotypes, which are, of course, tantamount to sexual violence.
Trent, please. Porfiria, what is it this time?
Yesterday's commentary about Prince Charles's visit to Metroplex.
Yeah, you called the future king of England a poster child for inbreeding. I thought we might get a little feedback.
Sure, if you want to take a few words out of context.
I have the reel right here. Let's give it a listen, shall we?
Don't these pasty-faced kidney-philiacs know they lost the Revolutionary War? If the prince formerly known as Doofus wants to tie up traffic with his motorcade, he can take his pallid, red-lipped, old-school, kipper-stinking, darts-tossing, pub-crawling, banger-stuffed rump in a lorry and drive the wrong side of the road straight off the white cliffs of Dover. On the other hand, is there anything nicer for breakfast than a hot, toasted English muffin? For WACLU, this is Porfirio Stoltfoot's Hawk Feather.
See? It's balanced.
I'll just send out the form apology. So what do you have today?
Wheelchair access. Yesterday, I was denied admittance to a public venue.
In this day and age, that's unbelievable. Which public venue?
Skate-O-Rama.
The ice rink?
Just because I'm not able-bodied.
That's ridiculous. You are able-bodied.
Mary.
I just can't get Friday night out of my mind.
Ah, the limbo contest.
What are you saying? Mary, what are you saying?
Nothing.
You know I'm a semiplegic. Don't make me bring the lawyers into this.
Just read me the commentary.
I hope you're not suggesting.
I'm not suggesting anything. I fully understand that many people are disabled with...
Differently abled, Mary.
Okay. Differently abled
the with... The term is counterintuitively gifted, thank you very much.
All right. Counterintuitively gifted with restless leg syndrome.
Afflicting 10 million Americans with tragic annoyance. Plus, in my case, a morbid disinclination to walk. I have a doctor's note.
Mary, the Girl Scout will be
Scooter
here...
Scooter Pyle, line one. Scooter Pyle, line one.
Hello. Hello.
Gott in Himmel. I can't tolerate this commotion. It unsettles my extremities.
Hold on, hold on, hold on. Gotta deal with Studio One. Scooter, what?
Yo, Mary, what's up?
Nothing's up. I'm talking to Porfirio. Why?
Then why are you calling me?
I'm not. There's a phone call for you. This is the intercom.
I'm out of here. I have a commentary to write.
Scooter Pyle, line one. Scooter, pick up line one.
Who do you suppose it is?
How should I know? You're the engineer. Why don't you try something technical, like picking up the phone?
Good idea. Maybe about my silencer. See you, Mary.
Silencer? What's that, some new piece of equipment in his control room?
I don't think so.
Hello, team.
Oh, no.
Now, Horatio, this is the newsroom itself. This is the nerve center. This is where it all comes together.
Hello, Mr. Pringle.
Hello, team. Allow me the pleasure of introducing our newest broadcast partner, Horatio Chung.
Oh, please don't stand up.
I won't. Broadcast partner, Mr. Pringle?
That's right. Mr. Chung is the newest member of our team. He's very excited about partnering with us and exploring the synergies that will direct WACLU toward a new paradigm for the 21st century. From the moment he read our mission statement, he knew he wished to...
advertise on our station.
Exactly.
Absolutely not. No, ma'am. Not while I'm president of WACLU will we have any advertising on it. No, 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 no. This is a sacred trust we have been entrusted with. We are not salesmen. We are stewards of the public airwaves. And we are not for sale. Repeat, not for sale.
Well said, Mr. Pringle. Shall we play her the commercial?
I'll bet you mean underwriting credit.
Of course he does. Mr. Chung, Mary is the producer of Blandon Park Edition, and as you can see, she is as fiercely independent as she is bright and unthreateningly attractive.
I can see that you are fearful, Miss Demarest, but there is no need for you to be concerned. The people I represent share your agenda.
Public radio has no agenda.
The people I represent share your lack of an agenda.
Mary and Trent, Mr. Chung is the Director of Public Outreach, North American Directorate for the People's Republic of China.
Pringle.
What? Oh, did I say China? I meant the Middle Kingdom. Mr. Chung represents the Middle Kingdom.
We are repositioning the brand.
New and improved and on our team.
Mary...
I'm in a situation here. I can't rewrite the questions now.
But I've got to make an important phone call, and then the kid'll be here, and I've got nothing but softballs to lob.
You don't hear Larry King complaining.
Okay. Listen, I'm running out to the mall for a moment.
I thought you had to make a phone call.
I do, but the Kikalisha has me parsed. I'm going to stop by World of Cuisine for a cup of hot Afghan yogurt. I won't be long.
Mary, if you don't mind, Mr. Chung's support is worth a great deal to WACLU, so I need a moment of your undivided attention, and I need you to keep an open mind.
Uh-huh. That's what you said when you brought in the Dioxin Foundation.
Deep pockets, too. We could have skipped the fall pledge drive, so please, Mary, if you'll just give an ear to the funding credit, I'm sure you'll also want to enlist Chai, the Middle Kingdom, onto the role of esteemed teammates as much as I do.
WACLU is supported by listeners like you. Also by the Middle Kingdom, sponsors of the 35th National Congress of the Communist Party, where President Jiang Zemin wowed the crowd with his 30,000-word report titled, Hold High the Great Banner of Socialism Despite Imperialist Meddling in Our Internal Affairs. The Middle Kingdom, where labor is cheap and expression is dear.
I, for one, think it strikes just the right tone.
Nice jingle.
That is our national anthem.
Well, it really rocks. Excuse me, Mr. Chung. May I have a quick word with His Eminence?
By all means.
Sign him up, Mr. Pringle. I'm sure you'll be able to find another producer in no time.
Are you saying you'd resign?
I'm saying I'd resign and Trent would follow me out the door. But I'm sure Porfiria would make an excellent anchor.
Luz Rosenblit? He's the dean of Suburban Metroplex Broadcast Journalists, not counting Metroplex Heights. This place could go down like the... What was that horrible disaster movie?
Pluto Nash?
All right, Mary, you may win this one. But when it's time to get your Christmas tote bag, don't come crying to me.
WACLU, hold please. WACLU, hold please.
Back in a flash, Trudy. I'm running out to the mall.
Godspeed, Mr. Rosenblit.
Attention, Blandon Park Mall shoppers. Looking for the perfect gift for that certain Blandon Park someone? For mailboxes, lawn ornaments, and bicycle reflectors in tasteful earth tones, check out the deals at the Conformity Shop on Level 2. And shoppers, stop by Dr. Tom Richards' Lipo Depot. Eyelids and lips done while you wait. And ask about his Valentine's Day special. Do two breasts, get one free.
Excuse me.
Welcome to World O Cuisine. Your passport, please?
I didn't bring it. I just...
Whatever, we'll arrange a one-meal visa. Which country would you like to dine in? We can seat you immediately in Belarus. There's a 20-minute wait for Italy. Sri Lanka is temporarily closed while the bomb squad roots around.
Actually, I just wanted to make a phone call. Where are the pay phones?
Just past Swaziland.
Thanks. Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me. Sorry.
Hello. You have reached Universal Public Radio. If you are calling for program information, press 1 now. If you are calling for the news department, press 2 now. If you're calling to complain about leftist bias in our coverage, please hold and a comrade will be with you shortly. Hello, this is the UPR News Department. If you wish to file a story, press 1 now. If you wish to file a commentary, press 2 now. If you wish to file a lawsuit, press 3 now. If you wish to speak to some camp, press 0.
Hello, Universal Public Radio.
Leona Crump, please.
Third World Week, this is Leona.
Leona!
Trent Rosenblit.
Trent!
Hey, I'm calling about that audition we discussed.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Trent, we just can't do it.
What? Well, I thought you said I was a top candidate for the host gig.
I'd really kind of...
The timing doesn't work, Trent. Sorry. So, we'll just be listening to your show today.
Today's show?
Yeah. We have to pull the trigger fast on this hire, so we'll all be listening to Blandon Park Edition today.
Gee... Leona.
In about 15 minutes, actually.
That'll be your audition.
I'm not sure this is the most ideal platform for me. It's kind of a slow news day, you see.
Make it ideal, Trent.
Dig deeper. Find the essence. Live the moment. Tell it with sound. That's why people tune into UPR, Trent. Church bells. Gravel. Truth that goes crunch, Trent.
Truth that goes crunch.
Leona.
Gotta run, buddy. And I think you do, too. Break a leg. And let me hear it snap.
What?
Trent! Trent!
Faye!
How are you?
Why, you look positively seamless. What's happening?
Well, it's 67 degrees here in Blandon Park under partly cloudy skies, and we're playing the hits.
How are things at old without a clue?
WACLU is and always will be WACLU. It's immutable. Unlike WBPR. What's the format this week? Still all Kenny Rogers all the time?
You betcha. As we swing past 4 p.m. on this beautiful Monday, we're number one in the market.
Look at you, Faye. The pedicure, the power hair. You even sound commercial.
The word is marketable, my friend. I took my instrument to Tom Richards. The man's a genius. One little laryngeal tuck and WBPR moves me into morning drive time. I get seven figures, the chopper, and in 7 years, I get to choose my own doctor.
Actually, I have a little negotiation of my own going on right now with UPR. Don't tell Mary.
You two still sitting 3 feet apart?
She doesn't know.
Trent, what are you screwing around with Universal Public Radio for? It's a snake pit. The pay stinks, the politics, my God, the politics. Listen, you gotta know when to walk away, know when to run. See Dr. Richards about that nose whistle, and I can get you an interview at WBPR.
Thanks, but no thanks. It's not my, style.
Trent, think about my offer. This is Faye. Have a nice day, McVeigh. Catch you next time.
Jackass. Simple-minded jackass.
Porphyria, what are you doing here so close to showtime?
I might ask you the same thing. But if you must know, I wanted to go to Belize for some fried plantains and a Diet Coke, but these jackasses have closed it for some sort of cholera outbreak.
Ah. Did Mary like your commentary?
I haven't showed it to her yet. I'm still frankly aghast at her thoughtless implication that simply because I technically have the use of my legs, I somehow don't belong in a wheelchair.
Don't be silly, Porphyria. Mary respects you enormously. We all do. I know I do. You are an irrepressible voice.
I am the voice of the unheard.
Of course you are.
And the damned unheard never shut up.
I've seen your mail.
These jackasses. They hear a half Latina, one quarter Amish, one quarter Native American in a wheelchair, and they can't get past the, you know, easy stereotype.
Sure, lump you in a category.
Gavolt. They don't know me. Yikes, it's 4:10. I gotta burn rubber.
Yeah, 13 minutes to showtime. Barely time for you to be edited.
Oh, no time for that. I have 4 bonnets at the dry cleaner. Peace, pale brother.
Sorry I'm late. How's everything going?
How's it going? I'll tell you something. It's a nightmare. That's how it's going. Pringle's coming by with another live one, and if it falls through, we're all on the breadline. You blow in 5 minutes before the show like you haven't got a care in the world, and Porphyria has completely and totally vanished.
I think she had to roll out on an errand.
Who rolls out? Who does errands in the middle of a show? Pardon me. I haven't edited her commentary. I haven't even seen her commentary.
I believe she said it's about Skaterama. What do you suppose makes it an arama?
What's the difference? I know she has a bee in her bonnet, but let me tell you something. I need to see the bonnet.
I'm pretty sure you will.
Well, she's certainly not going on the air with something I haven't seen first. We'll have to use an evergreen. Let's check the studio and see what's on the shelf. Scooter, are you there?
Where?
Scooter, for God's sake, check the rack, please, and see if we have any pre-recorded Porphyrias.
10-4, good buddy. Woo-hoo!
Well, what?
Somebody spilled some chai on my soldier of fortune.
The show is about to start. Do we have any Porphyria commentaries ready?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not to worry, we have one.
Are you holding it in your hand?
No, Mary, that would be gross.
The reel. Are you holding the reel of Porphyria's commentary?
Now, Hank, this is the newsroom. This is the nerve center. This is where it all comes together. 3 minutes from now, the whole day of journalism comes to fruition in Studio A. We'll listen to the show live in the master control. Come on.
This is very exciting.
I know you'll be impressed. See that glass window? See that fellow with the vague look about him? Go in there, Hank. I'll be right behind you.
Through there?
Yeah, that's right. I'll join you in 2 shakes. All right, Mary, you win. China is out of the picture, but I have got the answer to our prayers, the real deal. You said you'd embrace an underwriter whose business you didn't find morally reprehensible. Well, I found him. I found him, Mary, right here in the mall. And get this. he's willing to underwrite the show, the whole shooting match, for 2 years.
Wow. Well, that's excellent. Congratulations. Who is this Mr. Wright?
It's not Mr. Wright. It's Mr. Arama.
Mr. Arama?
That's right. Hank Arama. He owns Skaterama.
And that's him? In the control room? But Mr. Pringle...
Mary, Hank's part of the family now. He had to meet Scooter eventually.
1 minute to air. Hey, Hank. I want to see my scar.
Here we come, colleagues. I come bearing commentary.
Where the hell have you been?
Meditating on the truth. I have been to Skaterama, and I shall never be the same.
No. This is almost too good to be true. I've got to tell Hank.
All right, Porphyria, go live, but never again.
Don't worry, Mary, you wouldn't change a thing.
Set my identity.
One, two, three, four, five. One, two, three, four, five. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Scooter, how's the whistle situation?
I'm not hearing it. Give me some more nose.
Okay.
Clean as a whistle. No, I mean clean as a not whistle. Stand by, Trent. 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to Blandon Park Edition. I'm Trent Rosenblit. In today's top stories, in a big blow to the local economy, Blandon Park was eliminated as a possible location for a U.S. Department of Energy radioactive waste disposal site. Disappointed economic development officials remain optimistic, however, about Blandon Park's chances to be a finalist for the so-called Prison Without Walls for terrorists and serial killers. The Blandon Park Good Neighbors Council has announced revised architectural standards aimed at curbing the outbreak of non-earth tone mailbox flags, citing numerous examples of, quote, alarming nonconformity. Supreme Neighbor Thad Von Dachau vowed to eradicate what he called the Red Menace. Von Dachau, of course, created a stir last month while pressing for the arrest and deportation of Joseph Winter, an albino American who resides in Blandon Park's Highway Vista quadrant.
I stand by my position. He is a decent fellow, but his eyes are simply too garish.
Supreme Neighbor Thad Von Dachau. In entertainment news, actress J.P. Morgan has agreed to be Grand Marshal of the annual Blandon Park Parade of Minivans. This follows the sudden withdrawal from the event of the Blandon Park High School Fightin' Compromisers football squad. The tan and beige are serving a month of weekend detention for what administrators termed unspecified crimes against humanity. More Blandon Park Edition after the break.
You're listening to WACLU, all the way to the left on your radio dial. Underwritten this hour by Funeral Shack, the last word in the last purchase you'll ever make. See our familiar black kiosk at the Blandon Park Mall. And by listeners like you.
Stand by, Trenton 5.
When do I talk?
Just wait for the light to go on, honey.
Okay.
Are you nervous, sweetheart?
A little bit.
Don't worry, it'll be fun.
And now back to Blandon Park Edition and the Dean of Broadcast Journalists in the southwestern suburbs of Metroplex, not counting Metroplex Heights, Trent Rosenblit.
We're back with our very special guest, a very nice, if I may say, very sweet little girl named Courtney Jenkins, who is the Girl Scout cookie sales champ for all of Blandon Park. Courtney, you sold 1,212 boxes of cookies. What are your selling secrets?
I followed the stench of fear, Mr. Rosenblit. I walked down every street in Blandon Park and every stinking cul-de-sac. In the darker districts, the shadows, the seamy underbelly where decent people seldom go. I saw things, Mr. Rosenblit. A dead bird, a decapitated Care Bear, a set of shutters in a non-conforming shade of lavender.
My God.
God has nothing to do with it. I bore my cookies on my back, and I sold them to the frightened and the weak. I'm only 11. But I'm tired. So very tired.
I see. And did your mommy and daddy help you?
My parents are dead. I'm a ward of the county.
And I'm sure the county is very proud of you. What do you think you'd like to be when you grow up?
Heavily sedated, because the things I feel would make you weep.
We only have 30 seconds left, Courtney, and I wanted to ask you in the few 26 seconds. Now it's 25 seconds. In the remaining few, okay, it's only 22 seconds we have remaining. Did you think, Courtney?
Did you know there's a whistling sound coming out of your nose?
All righty. We're here with the adorable Courtney Jenkins, Blend Park Girl Scout Cookie Sales Champ. Courtney, to wrap up, what would you say is the most popular cookie?
Oh, that would have to be the Thin Mints.
Thank you, sweetheart. And now with today's last word, WACLU's senior news analyst, Porphyria Stoltzfus Hawkfeather.
Today I speak on a disturbing subject. A nightmare. One of our society's most pustulant shankers. I refer, of course, to ice skating. Consider, for example, the waste of resources. Don't water your exquisite lawn, we're warned over here. Don't put so much ice in my whiskey sour, you whore, over there. And every damn time you turn around, don't take a long, lingering, so desperately needed, get me away from all this pain, you simple-minded jackass! Bath. Countless marriages have been split like the paw of a playful kitten named Penny trying to catch the needle of my sewing machine over the issue of running water while brushing teeth. I know mine was, and I know I'm a very fast brusher.
Girl in that dress, stay there. Someone will get to you.
Do you see the children? Wee ones? Adorable little angels gliding across the ice. Ha! They are baby seals, innocently awaiting slaughter. It's called slam and slice, and I ask you whose wobbling little calf will be next. Ask yourself when you next skate on a frozen river of blood. At long last, something must be done about ice skating, and I cannot do it alone. I am very, very busy. For WACLU, this is Porphyria Stoltfus Hawkfeather.
Okay, Trent, we're clear.
Thank God.
Thanks for watching my Orange Julius for me, Mr. Pringle.
My pleasure, Courtney. Would you like another one?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm buying. Hello, Mary. Great show as usual.
I'm sorry, Miss... Wait, what?
You really shifted the paradigm. Excellent work.
I noticed Mr. Arama left in you'd call it a big hurry. Is he still on the team?
Hank? No.
Well, you don't seem too upset about it. I thought he was our last hope.
Last hope? Are you out of your mind? This is our greatest opportunity.
Trent, do you know what's going on?
The Girl Scout talked Arama out of suing.
And sold him 70 boxes of Do-Si-Dos. Mary, meet our new vice president for development.
Hi.
Well, that is an awfully big job for such a little girl.
Don't worry. I'll squeeze them till they bleed.
Come on, Courtney. Let's hit the mall and synergize.
Okay.
Well, Trent, that wasn't so bad, was it?
Trent Rosenblatt, call on line one.
I think we made radio history this afternoon.
Mary, please, not now.
Trent, line one.
Hello, Rosenblatt here. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. No. Yeah, you're right. Right. It didn't crunch. I understand. Thanks anyway. Bye. Well, Mary, I guess I should tell you what that was all about.
It was some ass from UPR calling to say you didn't get the job.
How could you possibly know that? All I said was it didn't crunch.
Trent, how far apart do we sit?
Janine Garofalo played Mary Demarest. Fred Willard was Trent Rosenblatt. Tony Shalhoub was Angus Pringle. And Lisa Gladstone was Porphyria.
You also heard the vocal stylings of Scott Strickland, Faye Schneider, Karen Trott, Peter Pringle, Sharon Ball, Sophie Kaplan, Rex Stone, Chris Riley, Stephen Day, Polly Humphreys, and Scott Simon.
On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, and Mike Volo, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director, the sound designer of Pledge This, and Jennifer Munson, our engineer. We had help from Alicia Rebensdorf and Michael McLaughlin, our webmaster. He's Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer, and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find free transcripts, MP3 downloads, and our podcast at onthemedia.org, and sign up for our newsletter at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Media is supported by the Bydell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the John and Anna Maria Phillips Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.
Thanks for checking out this week's On the Media from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Support your local public radio station. Visit onthemedia.org to find where On the Media is playing near you. And please help support this free service by becoming a member of WNYC at WNYC.org. And thanks.